go back to the island.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Mike Malott, Jack Spencer, Jacob Kanzler, and Lisa Church. A little later, we're going to talk with John James. He's a candidate in the U.S. Senate race, and we were able to catch up with him on Mackinac Island, and we caught up on a lot of people, Jacob, to be perfectly honest. A lot of people up there. If you have any inkling or any passion to run for anything on the Republican Party for 2018, you had to be there this weekend.
Oh, yeah, and it sounds like you had a busy schedule. You got around to all the different events and tried to figure out what was going on. So it kind of stuck out to you in terms of who had the biggest presence, who made their presence known the most on the island to you.
You know, surprisingly, Jacob, it seemed to be that Stan Grote, who's running for the Secretary of State, had by far the biggest presence.
You had some numbers on some supplies he brought.
Oh, yeah. So he brought 1,000 T-shirts. He claimed to have 1,700 pieces of, or not pieces, boxes of fudge. He had 1,000 bags. He had so much stuff that, you know, everybody had their set tables that they could rent there in the big parlor room. I think that's what it's called. And he needed 3 of them. Like, just one wasn't enough. Like, one was good enough for about everybody else, including us and Cranes who were doing the straw poll. For him, he needed 3. He had like 3 posses of people who were all over the place. They were at the docks. They wanted to hand out flyers, but then the cops told them they couldn't hand out this year because they didn't want to do litter. It was pretty impressive, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds like an intentional effort. I mean, I think he has some experience, and I think we covered the Dan Grott, Peter Lucido primary a few years ago, and there was a reason why that primary over in Macomb County was so contentious, and he is definitely a political machine, and it seems like he had it on display this weekend.
Well, and you know what? He really represents a very conservative wing of the party, and he is running on a platform of security and elections and making it clear that we shouldn't have any illegal residents or any immigrants who are not U.S. citizens voting in elections. And I think Ruth Johnson does that already, but he wants to make it clear that that's exactly what he is standing for. So on the conservative end of things, and I mention this because there was some scuttle that Mary Tretter Lang, who has been known in Republican circles for many years, she's an Eastern Michigan University trustee and ran for state house, that she was there as kind of the establishment pick to prevent Stan Grote from actually getting the nomination because there's a fear that in a general election he wouldn't do so well. You know, at a convention, this guy should roll. I mean, you should just looking at the way he's working this convention process, he should roll. But there's a feeling that in general election, he wouldn't do so well.
So we have Stan Grott established. Who else kind of made it clear that you should pay attention to them? And maybe another question is, who kind of flew under the radar that maybe didn't make their presence known as much?
Well, you know, I think that Bill Schuette, for him, it seemed like in his crew, they tried to make this like a coronation, that this was going to be Bill Schuette as a Republican nominee, and we should all the Republicans should just get in line because that's just the way that it was going to be. And I think that kind of served a couple points. I mean, one, I think they want as few people as possible in that primary. There was still even these rumors floating that Brian Kelly isn't going to run for governor, just to even just put that seed of doubt out there. Now, Kelly didn't do anything to verify that at all. In fact, I would say quite the opposite. He was very, very visible on the island. He played for 3 hours at horns on the keyboards. He did the Sunday brunch. He was the only person up there doing the Sunday brunch stuff. He was the prominent figure at the run or bike around the island for those brave souls who got up at 6:30 in the morning to do that. So he made his presence known. He is going to run, I'm sure. But the reason I mention it at all is that it was really pushed that this is going to be Schuette and everyone should just get in line.
Do you want to say anything else about the other gubernatorial candidates, Patrick Colbeck and Jim Hines?
Well, you know, from our straw poll, I thought that Colbeck did pretty well, to be perfectly honest. I mean, that's not his crowd at all. He still got 18%. Even the people who don't agree with him all agree that really Patrick Colbeck's a very amenable guy. I mean, they like him personally. You know, he is very friendly. And so nobody has really any animosity toward him except, I don't know, maybe Arlen Meekhoff because those two clash. But, you know, by and large, he is a pretty amenable guy, and he had a strong presence there, and he had folks who were handing out his T-shirts, and he was meeting folks and working it. And so I thought he did pretty well. You know, one person who I thought really impressed me as far as the impact that he made up at that convention is John James. And we're going to talk to him in the podcast here in a little bit, but think about this. I mean, probably 4, 5, 6 months ago, very few of those Republican attendees probably knew John James from Adam, right? Who is this guy? And in such a short period of time, for not having any of the free events, he didn't come with flocks of kids wearing T-shirts that had John James on them. He made an impression. He had 27% of the straw poll vote. So more than a quarter of the people supported him over known quantities like Fred Upton or Bob Young. I thought that was pretty striking. From the folks I talked to, they thought that he made a very strong impression and is maybe kind of that new young face, with a military background that could really do something. A couple things that also kind of struck me, Jack, and I kind of wanted to get your impression on this here. During one of the panels, Bill Schuette, Brian Kelly, Ruth Johnson, Arlen Meekhoff, Tom Leonard up there talking about prevailing wage. And it seemed to be unanimous that we should repeal prevailing wage, except Bill Schuette was very nuanced in his answer in that he said alter or change prevailing wage. He never used the word repeal, and I thought that was very striking.
Well, you got to remember that's a popular issue on the Republican side. But overall, I don't think there's any secret about the fact that if somehow that were to actually get on the statewide ballot, repealing prevailing wage would almost certainly be defeated. And I think Bill Schuette's enough of a politician to pick certain issues like that where he's not necessarily going to go way out on a limb and necessarily take the automatic Republican or conservative position.
As we were watching Bill Schuette in action here, obviously priming himself for the Republican nomination and painting the picture that he's going to be a shoe-in for the nomination, do you think that that's a realistic thing to presume at this point?
That's a classic thing to do for someone who's the perceived front runner, and particularly for that audience out there. I think he's clearly convinced people on the insiders in Lansing, et cetera, that he's definitely the one in the stronger position and everything else. Whether that, I'm not sure, statewide, with the attitude and everything, that the anti-incumbent, the anti-insider attitude that may still pop up again in 2018, I don't know how comfortable I'd be running around making that my major focus statewide as far as regular voters are concerned.
And Mike, I wanted to get your impression on this too, because Patrick Kolbeck, it would seem if this guy gets a little bit of money, he can play on kind of this somebody else attitude, you know, kind of somebody who's got a different perspective on things, this outsider type attitude, if he was able to get some cash.
Oh, I agree with that. He lacks statewide name recognition right now, which gives him the opportunity to come in as the outsider. He's, of course, been a senator. He's been around, but statewide, he's not well known. That gives him the opportunity to be the fresh face, especially when you're running against people like Bill Schuette and Brian Kelly, who've been around, they're known. That frustrated anti-incumbent may be a sentiment that Patrick Kolbeck could make use of. If he plays his cards well, he may be able to make use of that.
You know, another thing I found striking, Jack, is that Brian Kelly's part-time legislature ballot proposal didn't have a presence on the island much at all. Apparently, there was somebody collecting some signatures out by the docks, but they were not at the Grand Hotel trying to get signatures or anywhere else. Does that surprise you?
No, really, because that whole thing is Brian Kelly's effort to break away from the insiders in Lansing, to get his name attached to being a rebel, someone who is against the establishment, And that is about the internet. That is about the people that can be contacted on Facebook. That is about getting him to be associated with, hey, I'm not for these people. I'm not for the swamp. I'm against the swamp. And boy, you know, I mean, I realize there aren't very many swamps, if any, on Mackinac Island. But in terms of, you know, who was up there and who this was playing for up there, as far as insiders, that's just not the place to even be talking about the part-time legislature.
Probably have much more luck at the Michigan State Notre Dame game.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, as far as picking up signatures, et cetera, you'd rather go to something like that. Mackinac Island, first of all, it's not a big enough population to go after, and secondly, you had the wrong people up there this weekend to be trying to do anything with that.
Too many people asking too many questions, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and I also just don't think there would be that many, period, that would sign it. That's hated inside the Beltway here, so.
Here's somebody who I know went to Michigan State Notre Dame, and that was Jacob. Did you see any part-time legislative petitions being tossed around?
No, I did not.
What, did you see anybody passing petitions around?
No, I neglected to tailgate the full time you're allowed to.
Oh,
it was a very hot day, right?
It was, yeah.
I swooped in enough to have some drinks before the game and then headed into the stadium to watch my team get blown out.
That was a real hot. Thank God it was a night game, though, first of all, right?
Yeah, well, it didn't really cool down in the stadium until, like, the third quarter. I mean, it was a packed stadium. There were a lot of warm bodies.
Yeah.
I was unfortunately surrounded by a lot of Notre Dame people that I did not anticipate. Oh, my fiance is a Notre Dame alumni. I counted on that. I did not count on us being drowned out by the Notre Dame band on our side of the field and other blue shirts around.
Well, when you're winning 35-7 or whatever it was, there's a lot to cheer about, and their voices become very loud in a cavernous place like Spartan Stadium. But anyway, well, let's try and change the subject, because that's something I don't want to reminisce about much. But I want to go to Lisa here a second, because Lisa was in some cramped quarters this week. It sounds like the heat was on in the courtroom in Genesee County for the Nick Lyon prelim.
If you mean in reference to him, not necessarily, but in reference to us.
Yeah,
yes.
You guys.
It was way too hot.
You guys just sound like you were in a phone booth there for that prelim.
It smelled like a locker room by the end of the day.
Oh, that is gross. All right, so tell me, just kind of give us the feel of what was going on here. First of all, this prelim isn't going to be over with in the next day or two, is it?
No. According to the attorneys, it's supposed to take weeks. They didn't give me a specific number, but apparently quite a while.
Because you asked, is this going to be a week or 2 weeks? And their response was?
Their response was, it's going to be a long time.
To keep that in mind, let's kind of put our listeners into the courtroom here. What kind of struck you either about the prosecution or the defense that maybe didn't translate into copy?
Was pretty straightforward.
How do you think Todd Flood did?
I'm no lawyer, but he seemed disorganized to me.
Did he really?
Yes. He seemed to go from point A to point B to point D and back and forth. It didn't seem real organized.
What about the defense? What about Nick Lyon's defense?
They objected a lot to some of the questions. They seemed a little bit more organized and spent quite a bit of time trying to establish the parameters under which you would notify the public of the Flint water crisis or the Legionnaire's disease.
So that seems to be the territory that they're trying to stake here, right?
It did on Thursday and Friday.
Talk about the judge. Was he asking a lot of questions?
He asked a few questions, but not a lot. He seemed mostly concerned with, the first day, why they felt it more important to notify the governor than the public. That was mostly what he asked.
Do we know when we're coming back to court to continue the fun?
No. They've set it out possibly in October. We're waiting for the judge to set a date.
All right. Well, thanks for that update, Lisa. I thought it was striking. We asked Rick Snyder about the prosecution of Nick Lyon and the other state employees, Jack, and he just made the observation, this has taken a long time. I mean, it's been over a year since some of these DEQ employees have been charged, and their prelim still hasn't been wrapped up.
I don't know what you can say about this when you're the governor under this kind of unusual circumstance. I would assume he has to be kind of careful about what he does and doesn't say, and so making a sort of unarguable observation like this has taken a long time probably is a pretty smart response or characterization of what's going on.
All right, well, that was some of the scuttlebutt from the island, and as in Spartan Stadium, that was super hot. Attendees say A long-timer said that they hadn't seen a hot one like that as long as they've been there. A lot of uncomfortable walks from the Grand Hotel down to the Main Street, I can tell you that. And so folks were staying at the Grand Hotel if they could, and that meant receptions over at the Jockey Club were very popular. Just wanted to give our listeners a little bit of just some final numbers on the straw poll that we did with Cranes. In total, 693 people submitted ballots. 378 of them were paper, electronic, 318. We did have several hundred emails that we had sent out to people to submit their votes, and 200 of them did not come back. And so we don't know if there was just a technology problem there, if they ended up getting paper ballots instead. But that was just kind of something that we noticed, that there was a gap in people who received the email SurveyMonkey one-time address that didn't use them. So, okay, with that, we're going to go to our interview into a side room, the trophy room of the Grand Hotel. Have you ever been to the trophy room before, Jack? It's right off kind of the lobby, off to the side.
They've moved things around there sometimes. I don't particularly remember that one. I know there's other ones with this different displays and pictures of President Truman when he was up there way back in the when he was president for vacation. But I don't. The trophy room doesn't stand out in my memory.
Kyle, did you pick the location of the room, or did the subject of the interview choose?
Well, you know, initially we're going to meet on the front porch, and it was too hot. I will just say that.
I was just wondering if there was any symbolism to the interview being in the trophy room for a prospective Senate candidate.
That's a good question. That was a good question. No, and then the other option was in the lobby, but there was just too much talk to for audio. And even the trophy room was, it kind of muffled the sound a little bit. I tell you, Schuette had the best idea. He held his interviews down on the kind of the ground level where the administrative offices are. They had little conference rooms down there that were very, very quiet. So Schuette did a good job picking where he did his interviews.
Wants to make sure his voice is heard.
Yeah, well, that experience pays off, He's been doing this kind of stuff for a long time, running for things and going to these events. I am surprised that it was that hot up there, though. I worked on Mackinac Island for 3 years, and usually there's a pretty good breeze, and you can count on things being like 10 degrees cooler on the island than it is on the mainland. So.
And I think a lot of people were counting on that, and that was not the case, I can assure you. There were a lot of sweaty people walking into the Grand Hotel on Friday and Saturday, I can tell you that.
Well, sweat's not the smell you usually associate with Mackinac Island.
Oh, the dry humor of Jack returns. All right, let's go on to this interview.
Games we play. I hope you understand. I just had to go back to the island.
Y'all can sing.
And watch the sun go down.
Watch the sun go down.
Hear the sea roll in.
All right, we're in the trophy room here at the Grand Hotel, and John E. James. Are you using the E here in your name?
John James.
It's just John James. John James joined us here in the trophy room for our podcast. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, give us your impression of what this has been like for you as an announced candidate coming to this leadership conference, the reception you've received.
I got to tell you, it is invigorating to be on this island among so many passionate conservative Republicans. And, I was just saying a few moments ago, when you're really delivering a message, when you're talking about what you believe in, your core values, and then you're doing things that will make an impact, and when you're doing something that you truly believe in, it's absolutely energizing. And just being in the proximity of these precinct delegates who are so passionate, who get things done every single day for the Republican Party, for these grassroots leaders and activists who get things done on the everyday basis, moving the ball forward for the Republican Party, is just invigorating. And having people come up and want to take selfies with you when all you want to do is serve, it's really a trip. So it's great to meet everyone, and it's great up on the island. I believe that Ron Wiser, Ron Romney, too many people to name, have done such a tremendous job with the Republican Party across the nation and in the state of Michigan. It's just great to be a part of this event.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is Robert Young, it's obviously former Supreme Court Chief Justice, been at Republican events like this for a long time ongoing. You said this was your first one up here. How do you think you're doing side by side with him and with the other candidates?
Well, I believe that just being able in a position to be up here, the excitement that I'm able to generate has been apparent. At least where I'm walking around, seeing my shirt, seeing the enthusiasm, my message is really resonating. As I'm traveling around the state and as I'm talking to folks here at this conference, they pull me aside and they tell me, you know, I'm kind of afraid of where this world is going. The world is becoming a more and more dangerous place. And having somebody like you, John James, as a combat veteran who understands national security and understands how to keep us safe, that's somebody who I want on the floor of the Senate. And also, people here, there's some who made a sacrifice to get here. And they're still hurting from the downturn a decade ago. Everyone hasn't been pulled up. And so when they look at somebody who's a job creator and a business leader, they say, John, we want somebody on the Senate floor who understands a profit and loss statement, who understands cost benefit, who understands business, and who understands how to create economic opportunity for everyone. And there's a heavy vet presence with the National Security and Opportunity Fund, and they're actually having a salute to veterans today. There's a high veteran contingent up here, and they say, you know what, we need somebody who can take care of us because he is one of us. We need to do a better job taking care of our veterans. So I believe that message is carrying forward with a lot of enthusiasm. I'm pretty proud of the job the team's done.
On a personal note, your father's a Democrat. You're running as a Republican. Talk a little bit about that family dynamic, how
great
that happened,
question.
How did he go?
How
did he deal with it?
I got to tell you, if you watch my announcement video on johnjamesforsenate.com, I'm battle-tested, and that's what the video starts off as. And just to reiterate, my father's name is John James, and so is mine, but he gave me a different name, John Edward, as opposed to John Arthur, because he expected me from birth to be my own man. My father is also a combat veteran. My father also fought in Vietnam. My father has also been a servant leader in his community. And so my father also supports his son 100%. And that says a lot from somebody who's done so much to serve his country, done so much to serve his community, and now is willing to fight again with his son to take our conservative values to Washington.
You know, something else that I think is very striking here, 100 Facebook videos in 100 days. I don't think I've ever seen that. That's a lot of stamina.
Neither have I, but you know what? I have to say, when this was suggested by my friends and my team, I jumped at it. This is what we're all about. Increasing transparency of the candidacy, looking and feeling and being authentic and genuine. That's what we're all about. And you know, I believe that I have the passion for service, energetic leadership, fresh perspective and clarity of vision that so many people around the state of Michigan want and need. And in order to get the message out there, we just want people to be able to have access to kind of how I'm thinking, because I want people to know how firmly I believe. Look, I was a conservative outsider before I became a candidate. And I want people to know how important faith and family are to me, how God and country, in that order, how that governs my thought process and service before self, and then how I will begin to think about the challenges of the next 30 years.
You're not a Johnny-come-lately to Republican politics, are you?
Absolutely not.
Talk about this.
I've been a Republican for 20 years. And so I'm Republican because I'm conservative, and I'm conservative because I'm Christian. And again, my faith and my family values inform everything that I do. I'm strongly pro-life. I'm strongly pro-gun. And I believe that we the people have not delegated certain authority to the federal government, and overreach is not only unconstitutional, but it is hurting the futures. I'm a future fighter. I'm going to fight for the future of our country and for our children. Because as our debt screams past $20 trillion, this is something that people like me and my children are going to have to deal with. And we should have someone at the table. No taxation without representation. We should have someone at the table who has the most stake in the consequences that career politicians are putting on us.
Well, and I mentioned the Republican thing because I understand that Governor Snyder had a reelect or his reelectment, reelection announcement or some other announcement at your business, didn't he?
Yes, sir. Governor Snyder announced his reelect at our building a number of years ago. And I'm not ashamed of it. I'm a big Rick Snyder fan. Governor Snyder has done me the honor of acknowledging me in my service on the legislature floor for his state of the state a number of years back. And then Governor Snyder appointed me to the Michigan Veterans Trust Fund for a number of years, where I was able to serve veterans and their families who have come on unforeseen emergent circumstances and able to help them. During my time there, I was able to help raise the amount of the fund coming out of the recession, and also the amount of aid and how fast we're able to get aid to veterans with unforeseen circumstances who had emergent need. I served as chair on that board, and we had among the most successful chairmanships during the history of the board. I also serve on the Future Mobility Council as working on thinking about how Michigan moves forward and looks into the future and how mobility is going to affect not just Michigan but the world. And we are trendsetters in Michigan for how that's going to help create jobs and economic opportunity.
Obviously, primary first, process first. You've got to go through the primary. But I'm sure you probably already thought a little bit about the incumbent, Debbie Stabenow, longtime politician, successful politician. What do you assess as her weaknesses, where you think you could have an advantage in a general if you get that far?
Well, I believe that my biggest advantage is my contrast with Senator Stabenow. Again, as I've been traveling around the state, what do people care about the most? When I am driving my children, John and Hudson, to daycare in the morning, and I'm listening to the radio, right now, my focus is on providing for my family. My focus is taking care of my boys. My focus is on paying daycare tuition. My focus is on what we're eating at dinner time. And people really just want to know that their elected leaders are fighting and working for them. And right now, the people of Michigan do not believe their elected leaders are working for and fighting for them. I believe that our current senator's biggest weakness is that I'm able to bring a contrast, because Americans just want to feel safe. They want to feel safe as this world becomes a more dangerous place, and they want to know that when it comes time to enact or create a pro-business, pro-middle-class environment, that they're going to have somebody advocating for them who will defend their constitutional rights and who will also make sure there's economic opportunity, not just for them, but those children who they're taking to daycare.
One other thing I wanted to ask before we let you go here. Money obviously is going to be a big issue here as far as you getting your message out. How much of your own wealth are you willing to spend, and how much do you think this is going to cost to get you into the U.S. Senate?
Well, I'll tell you what. We're sitting in church a number of weeks ago, and my wife looked over at me, and my wife is amazing, beautiful, intelligent, and so encouraging. I could not do this without her support. And she looked over at me, and she said, "Babe, our investment into you is going to be worth more to not just our family, but to the state of Michigan. I believe in you." So we were able to take make a sizable sacrifice of our personal treasure into our children's futures and into the future of the state of Michigan. And we are extremely encouraged by the verbal and financial support that we've received from around the state and around the country.
So it's nothing you're concerned about, it sounds like.
Well, you know what? I'm going to keep pushing, because it is a necessary thing, making sure that you are financially healthy. I run a business. I understand that you can't do good in the community if you don't do well in profitability. So we're focused on the message, getting the message out there by doing things that are innovative and earning this seat by putting out these 100 videos in 100 days, again, on johnjamesforsenate.com. And I believe that we get the message out there, it will continue to resonate, and you do the right things, and the money will come in.
Very good. John James, thank you very much for being on
thank
the MERS
you.
Podcast this week.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Great talking to you.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to John James for taking time with us, Mike and Jack and Lisa and Jacob. And Jack, thanks for reminding us of the hazards of Mackinac Island. And how often do they scrub the streets? Like that Main Street area.
Well, they have sweepers there constantly. They had their little patch, their little 100-yard area or 50-yard long stretch, and they sit there and lean on the broom, and when they get a chance, they run out there and they sweep it off. Oh. Now, as far as scrubbing...
Yeah, scrubbing is what I asked.
Well, obviously, I don't believe they have a vehicle that does it like they do in a town, because I think the only vehicles allowed on the islands are there's some for the golf carts, last I knew, and then there's the ambulance and stuff like that.
Well, here's
so
the
I don't know
I
if
ask.
They actually have a street scrubber.
Well, here's the reason I ask, is because on Friday morning, I went and did a bike ride around the island, and I noticed that the streets were very wet, okay? And I didn't think it had rained the night before. And by the time I got back from doing the ride, my bike seemed particularly muddy, but I never did any dirt trails. So I went on the wet street, and I'm just wondering what that was that splashed on the back of my bike. And I'm thinking it wasn't mud.
No, there may be a hose. some kind of a situation where they take a hose and a horse-drawn wagon and has a hose on the back somehow,
yeah.
And they actually spray something. But yeah, I don't know how really clean the street ends up afterwards.
Kyle, do you have one of those guards in the back?
No,
here?
I don't.
Oh, that's too bad.
Wash your bike when you got home.
Wash the back of your shirt, too.
Yeah, right.
So that thing, is it called a mud flap?
Yeah, mud flap. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not the right name for it.
Yeah, clearly not. Well, anyway, lessons to learn. That's my lesson to learn for my next trip at Mackinac. Thanks, guys. I'm Kyle Malin. Thank you, AT&T, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, take care.
I had to come back.
Jimmy.
Thank you, Henry. Pearl Reefers, Parrot Heads, we love you. Thank you. Drive home carefully. See you in Maui.